You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, Linda, it looks like we're seeing an explosion of illegal aliens and unaccompanied minors coming into the United States through our great state of Texas. And I got to tell you, it's got everybody worried. And you and I know these areas that they're coming through on our southern borders because we've been down there several times. And you know, we even recently took an RV trip along the Gulf Coast and starting at our border with Mexico and moving towards Galveston. So when they mention these areas, you know, such as Del Rio and Matamoros and, areas.
Brownsville,
areas like that. You and I have been there. So we've seen that firsthand.
Well, and they're definitely already not well-off areas. And people, you know, really live kind of hand-to-mouth there. They're not wealthy. They don't have extra. And they're being completely inundated by immigrants. You know, I don't know if the people in the U.S. really have a concept of how bad this crisis is. And even though the Biden administration continues to say that there's no crisis at the border, in their private emails that get leaked, they know that there's a crisis at the border.
And they're panicking.
What's interesting is they're panicking because they can't handle it.
Well, yeah, because they lit the fire and now the fire is literally out of control. They're trying to control that narrative. It's clearly chaotic and it is a huge, not a little surge. It's a huge surge of immigrants every single day reaching the United States borders, and they're calling it a challenge, okay?
Yeah, well, it's a challenge that they have no idea how to handle, and it's like trying to put the genie back in the bottle, and that's not been successful for them. You know, there was no forethought to doing this to the American people, to the people in Texas, to the people in California, to the people in Arizona. There was no plan. And now they're like on the back end trying to make a plan. But here's the plan that would work. Shut the border again. But they won't do that.
You know, when they came in, as they were coming into office, and Biden's out there and Harris is out there on the campaign trail, and they're talking about how we have to rebuild our immigration system. Okay? People don't, on the left, they don't like the immigration system that President Trump got control over, because under the previous Obama and Biden administration, and even really, I mean, truth be told, under Bush and even going all the way back to Reagan, for God's sakes, when, you know, Reagan made the one-time deal of granting amnesty to immigrants that were in the United States, it has been out of control. And not only, when you talk about immigration, there's so many different levels here, because you got immigration on one hand, but then you've got the international cartels that that are drug cartels, but their alternate business is the smuggling of illegal aliens. Then you've got to talk about human trafficking and the trafficking of women and children for prostitution and sexual exploitation. The tremendous amounts of drugs that come into this country, it's all one thing. Now, you can separate it. Yes, immigrants on one hand, drugs on the other, but it's really driven by the international drug cartels.
You know, one would wonder why Joe Biden did not just have his Congress and Senate create an immigration bill. This is what we've been missing. This is the job of the Congress and Senate. It's not the job of the president to just make executive orders. Under Trump, when he had the entire Republican administration, they should have done this, and I blame them for not doing it. But then in the second half of his administration, when he lost the Congress, you know, then they didn't have an opportunity so much to do it. But now when Biden has everything he wants in the House and Senate, why don't they do this properly and constitutionally the way that it's supposed to be done, instead of damaging the states as he's doing? You know, they have called in a volunteer force from DHS now to go down and help. So their agencies cannot take care of the problem. And let me give you an example here.
And, you know, let me just say one thing, too. And this volunteer force is a non-law enforcement force. This is a logistics, supply, and services force.
Yeah, they can make food for them. They could, you know, help them in different ways. I mean, this is what we want to spend our time doing, is, you know, being caretakers to people flooding over the border, all of whom we know nothing about. And many of whom have COVID.
Yeah, we'll talk about those statistics, you know, in a little bit.
You know, with unaccompanied children that are flowing over the border, on the Southwest border total, okay, on the entire Southwest, right now it's up 64%. But in El Paso, it's up 96% for unaccompanied children. Del Rio, which is a small, very small town in Texas, it's up 122%. And in Big Bend, it's up 141%.
And it, again, Linda, and I thought you made a really good point of talking about, you know, what those areas are really like, because, you know, the American people, unless you're from Texas, the American people really don't understand what these areas are like. And we've been through these areas. And we're talking about impoverished border town areas where the economic base appears to be agriculture. You know, there's no industry there.
No.
Okay. It's basically agriculture and then just, you know, a regular low-level business trade. But these are impoverished areas. In Del Rio, for instance, the vast majority of people that live in Del Rio, Texas, you know, are at or below the poverty line. So without even consulting any of these local governments, without even consulting with our great governor, you know, Greg Abbott, who would have told the Biden administration all about Texas, they just, you know, he made the executive order, like you said, no forethought, no nothing. And now these poor, you know, mayors and city council people and police departments and police chiefs are and sheriffs are begging the Biden administration to stop this because they don't have the economic resources to support these huge numbers of illegal aliens and unaccompanied minors.
Well, don't forget, as you see these people pouring over the border, what are they carrying? They're carrying a backpack for the most part. Some people are carrying not even a backpack. They're coming here with absolutely nothing. They are being shoveled off to another location within 72 hours. It could be a location in Texas. It could be in Virginia. It could be anywhere in the country. And they have nothing. So how are they going to eat? How are they going to survive? Some of them are going to resort to crime in order to be able to survive. Others are going to get involved in gangs. Others are going to probably use churches or relatives or, you know, social means like shelters and, you know, food banks and things like that. All of the things that I've mentioned are going to put a big stress on our country.
But, you know, one of the things that I'm really concerned about, and it's starting to pop up now in the media, is we are in the process of getting COVID under control right now, all right? And we're doing a pretty darn good job in Texas. You and I went through the vaccination program, you know, with our health provider who's absolutely outstanding. I'll tell you what, just as an aside, that had to be the most organized military precision type run operation I've ever been to. But that being said, what's going on now is they are identifying illegal aliens coming across the border that have contracted COVID. And just recently, they got a bus out of coming in, you know, like a Greyhound bus or something, you know, coming in to the city of Brownsville. And they had a testing station there, because I think what the government's doing is they're hiring out, like, you know, Greyhound bus and stuff, and sticking these people on Greyhound bus with other Americans and who don't have COVID. And then they get to Brownsville and they do a rapid test. And just recently, their numbers rose from 108 to 185. And that brings up from January, just in that location, 1,558 people, illegal aliens, contracting COVID, who are then leaving because you can't, you can tell them to quarantine, and that's what they do, but they don't. And they go to all over the United States, spreading it everywhere.
Yes. And for a country that is just coming out of a horrific year of COVID, to release people with no rules and no regulations, no quarantine, no requirement to wear a mask, nothing. They're coming to infect you. I mean, maybe not intentionally, but what happens if they are in a food place, in a restroom, in a bus, and they're sitting next to an elderly person, or they're sitting next to anybody who then goes home and infects an elderly person? We are just getting out of this. When you let this many people come through and go out into the public and indiscriminately, even if unintentionally, pass this virus, we're going to start all over in this country. Don't forget, the virus started with a person in the world.
Yes. And you know what? Look at the irony and the hypocrisy of this, because you and I cannot leave the, you know, the contiguous United States and go to Hawaii or anywhere else. We can't go to Europe. We can't go to other countries without having a COVID test.
Well, you can't go, period, to many countries. Well,
exactly. You know, I mean, recently we took a week and we went to Hawaii, but we had to go through this entire health process and make sure that we had COVID test negative documents before we left the airport. They wouldn't even let us get on the plane.
Correct.
To go to Hawaii. And then we had to do the same thing to come back. Okay.
And yet they are releasing these people into Texas, into California, into Arizona. And this is going to cause another surge, another crisis. I want to contrast that, Ron, with a mother who was at a football game watching her son play. She was sitting by herself in the stands, not wearing a mask. She was literally sitting by herself. She was approached. She was tased.
Oh, yeah. By security. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And because she wasn't wearing a mask. And yet, look what you're doing to all of us on the southern border. Listen, you and I live in the path of where these people are coming. They come right up to 35, the same corridor that they use to traffic children.
And drugs.
And sex crimes and all of those things. The same corridor. And they get off everywhere and they melt themselves into communities. And we don't know who's going to end up here. And we don't know who's, in fact, you and I never have talked about this, but just recently there was a girl in our area, and we live in a very rural area, who was being followed by a Mexican man in a van. And it's happened more than once. And she actually had to end up running up to somebody's door who she didn't know and asking for help. You know, I mean, you don't know what you're getting across this border. I promise you that 100% of the people coming over that border are not people fleeing from some sort of political oppression. They are people that have all kinds of different motives.
Yeah. And this is not xenophobic. I mean, this is just common sense, and this is safety, and this is health and welfare. These things are very, very important issues. You know, you put your finger on it, you know, a couple of minutes ago when you said, not only do they, you know, go all over the place, but they've got to shelter somewhere. And what happens is they have a pretty good idea where they're going. They have relatives in the United States. They have friends in the United States that they stay. And so once they get across the border, once the coyotes, once the international drug cartels that traffic the people get them through. And by the way, they spend anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 a person getting across the border, paying somebody. But then they're going to house themselves in these houses where there are friends and relatives. That's how COVID is contracted. You know, when you do the tracking, the CDC, the WHO have all said that, you know, over 90% of all of the trafficking data, the tracking data states that people get it in a home. They don't get it at the ballpark, you know, where the woman got tased. They don't get it in the restaurant. They don't, very few of them get it in bars. They get it at home. They have it and they give it to somebody else, especially an old person.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the Biden administration who said that they would work across the aisle has not happened. The Biden administration who said that he would be extremely transparent has not happened. They will not talk about the numbers of people that are coming over. And in February alone, we are expecting in Texas over 100,000 people coming over the border in Texas. We are expecting in unaccompanied minors in 2021, and this is just an estimate because it's early in the year, 117,000 unaccompanied minors. Those are people that are under 16 years old. And if we have that compared to the year before, which was 30,000.
We are getting, in Texas alone, we are getting somewhere between 3 and 6,000 breaches of our border every single day. And those are just the ones that are getting caught or are self-identifying when they come across the border. Because classically, what they're told to do is get across the border and then turn yourself in to a, you know, border protection officer. And then the new Biden administration, you know, Department of Homeland Security protocol is for them to take them, take them to one of the housing complexes that we have, and we have several. A lot of them are going to military bases, by the way. I don't think a lot of people in America know that. And by the way,
yeah, Virginia, you're going to be welcoming a whole bunch in your town.
And by the way, you want to talk about hypocrisy real quick. You take a look, like in California and many other states, in New York and Chicago and all these different areas, the kids are not going to school. They're not going to school. They're doing virtual school, Zoom school, but they have already built up school facilities in all of these migrant camps, and those kids are going to school. And we're paying for that when American kids are sitting at home and depressed because they can't go to school.
Well, these kids will be going to school with them soon. You know, I want to point out, Ron, that one of the figures that has been given all the time about the number of illegal immigrants in the country has been 11 million. We've heard that for years. And the real figure, according to experts, is over 30 million.
That's what I've been saying. And that's what I've been saying.
And when he does his amnesty and his path to citizenship, we are going to incorporate that many more people into our country. I mean, we have 100 million more people than we had some years ago as it is, and now we're going to add thousands and thousands and thousands more. We have a breaking point in this country.
Well, and don't forget about HR1, the big push to basically let anybody vote.
Yes.
Anybody vote.
Yes.
If people don't think that this whole immigration issue is not about Democrats, a party solidifying a party base with up to 30 million new voters, then people are naive or they're nuts.
Well, and what's interesting is that in some of the counties at the border that are 85-95% Hispanic, that voted against President Trump in the
previous election,
first election, in the second election, he won handily. Why? Because even the Hispanics appreciated his border control.
Miss Trump yet? Let's have a cup of coffee.
A AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, canceling any of the freedoms that our Constitution guarantees is not an option. 5 years on the air, and we will not be silenced. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Well, I want to talk about hypocrisy at Twitter. Now, Twitter has a policy, Ron, that says that you cannot post anything about COVID that is untrue or would be dangerous to other people or they're thinking about COVID. And so many people have been banned and canceled from Twitter, including President Trump, amongst many others. And yet Louis Farrakhan is on Twitter, and this has been on Twitter for quite a while, telling people of color that the vaccine is an instrument of death, that it's meant to kill them, that not to take it. And people of color are people that have been really affected by COVID in an inordinate way, right? They've had a bad reaction when they get COVID. And we have heard that COVID is especially dangerous for people of color. So for Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam to have this video up with his speech that actually says that it's kind of the Kool-Aid of the Jim Jones society. It's, he calls it all kinds of things, but basically tells people that this is an instrument of death to people of color. And yet Twitter keeps this up.
Well, I think people know that, I mean, Louis Farrakhan has been around, you know, for decades. He's the leader of the Nation of Islam, and the Nation of Islam, without any doubt whatsoever, is a black nationalist, segregationist, extremist organization. Okay. I'm not saying it's a violent extremist organization. I'm not saying it's a militant organization, but it is absolutely a black nationalist and segregationist organization. He's way out there. Even among black people, Louis Farrakhan has got a minority following. So the vast majority of black people out there, and certainly the people that we know, don't take anything that Louis Farrakhan says. They don't take that as gospel. They don't take that to heart. But your comment is absolutely correct about the hypocrisy. So they don't cancel him. And yet when somebody has to ask why, I don't know if you know, but just recently, the CEO of Twitter, and I can't remember his name, he's the guy with the beard. He's kind of a whack job.
Yeah, he is.
He just sued our attorney general in Texas, Ken Paxton. And he's suing Ken Paxton because Ken Paxton and Governor Abbott had filed suit against the major social media companies, Twitter, Facebook, Google, for, you know, canceling everybody from President Trump to, and saying to them, if you cancel Texas citizens, and you prevent their First Amendment rights of freedom of speech, we are going to sue you. So the irony of this is the CEO of Twitter has filed a countersuit saying that our Attorney General Ken Paxton is denying Twitter their First Amendment rights. I don't know how that's going to work out, but I absolutely want to follow that lawsuit. I want to be a fly on the wall for that lawsuit.
Well, that's going
to be. I would love to see the arguments in court, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that
I'd
would
love
to
see
be
how that turns out.
Well, but Twitter's own policy says exactly this: may not use Twitter services to share false or misleading information about COVID-19, which may lead to harm. Now, if this goes back to who judges that? Who judges if what they're saying is true or not true? Because they have taken people off of Twitter who have said that the COVID itself is not as deadly or as bad as what they're saying, and that their numbers are all messed up. They've taken those people off. Yet Louis Farrakhan is on there calling it a vial of death and reminding people way back in the 20th century, when they were giving blacks drugs or shots that they didn't tell them what it was. And I think they were giving them syphilis to see what it did. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
Okay. Well, this was way back.
Okay.
And so he's basically putting this fear factor in people of color not to take the vaccine. And I just think that it's hypocrisy at its best. Again, they're deciding, just as Amazon does, what people in society are going to get canceled and what are not.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and you know this, and I'm very proud of this fact that I'm a what we call a Facebook prison inmate. Okay? Because I've been in prison. I've been in Facebook prison temporarily. And the last time I think I was in Facebook prison was a few months ago when, you know, they had closed all the restaurants, they'd closed all the bars. For God's sakes, they were closing down businesses. And I said, where's the tracking data? Everybody says we're following the science. Anytime you hear somebody say they're following the science, your ears ought to perk up and you ought to pay close attention to what's going to come out of their mouth next. But I just simply said, you know, I had the Center for Disease Control current statistics. I had the state of Texas statistics. I had the state of California statistics and the WHO, who I don't trust, but I even use their statistics. And I simply said, look, the tracking data that presently exists does not support the closure of businesses, restaurants, and bars. Okay, because over 90% of all the contractions of COVID have been traced directly back to homes, okay, where people are in close proximity to each other, they're not wearing masks, somebody goes out, they contract COVID, and then they bring it in. They just don't have, at that time, and they still really don't have the tracking data.
I want to correct something real quick, Ron, which was about the syphilis. This was in the 1930s. What the government did is black men who had syphilis, it was called the Tuskegee experiment or something.
Tuskegee?
Yeah. They did not give them the medication because they wanted to see what happened to them with syphilis. So when they were getting shots that they thought was going to cure them,
there was nothing in the shot.
Yeah. That was what was happening. And rightfully, people of color have never forgotten that. I mean, that was a terrible, terrible thing to do to people because syphilis is a terrible disease.
No, it could kill you.
Sure.
It could kill you.
So, well, yes. So anyway, that is the fear that's being put in people of color by the likes of Louis Farrakhan.
Well, you know, I want to talk about what's going on with the Black Lives Matter movement in the United States. And, you know, I roll up all about that movement in my book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. So even I, when I wrote that book just a few years ago, even I didn't even anticipate that the movement would grow as large as it has. And I think more importantly, would be funded by corporate America to the tune of almost $1 billion. So they've got large, you know, donations from Amazon, Jeff Bezos, who took my book off the shelves, Nike, Ben and Jerry. I mean, there was something like 130 different major corporations that have donated millions and tens of million dollars to the Black Lives Matter organization. But this is not a transparent organization. One of the problems that keeps coming up again and again and again about Black Lives Matter is it's, you know, it's a 501c3, right? So it's a quote nonprofit, close quote, organization. Just in travel expenses alone, recently they had to publish that they spent over $90 million for their corporate, you know, heads, you know, of the Black Lives Matter movement to travel, you know, all over the place, $90 million worth of travel. But here's the problem that's coming up, and it's coming up, interestingly enough, with leaders in the Black community, and they're angry with the BLM because they're asking, where's the money? Why isn't the money going to Black people and Black communities? And so very recently, a very well-respected film director by the name, who's Black, by the name of Eli Steele, and he's the guy that's got the new documentary, and I want to watch the documentary, and it's called What Killed Michael Brown, and that's chapter two in my Black Lives Matter book. You know, I know what killed Michael Brown, but I think he's going to talk maybe politically or in a sociological manner about maybe what he believes killed Michael Brown, including maybe allegations of racism or something. Anyway, that's a side story. The important story is that this is a pretty well-known figure, Eli Steele, and he recently visited the city of Chicago and was in Southside Chicago in a very, very impoverished area and one of the most violent areas in the United States and certainly in the city of Chicago. Now, you and I talk a lot about the statistics about, you know, shootings and gun violence in the city of Chicago. And he went to that area and was, you know, walking around and talking with Black leaders, including a Black pastor. And he said, you know, I don't see any Black Lives Matter signs here. Where he goes to like California, there's Black Lives Matter signs and things like that. He goes, you won't see Black Lives Matter signs here. And so Mr. Steele was kind of, you know, he was surprised by that. And basically the pastor said, Black Lives Matter brings nothing to Southside Chicago. You know, they have not donated anything to noble causes, to try to lift people up. And this pastor is the person that founded and is in charge of a neighborhood organization called HOOD. And it's an acronym that basically it's derived from bringing up, raising up Black people in the community and supporting the community. He says, Black Lives Matter is not there supporting their community. Black Lives Matter did not support the businesses that were burned down in Ferguson and looted, which many of them were Black-owned businesses. They didn't do that. And he said, you know, part of the problem that we have is that Black Lives Matter is, you know, more of a slogan and it's more of a political ideology, but it is nothing that can really help Black people. And he said, especially in states like California, and he drew an analogy of a woman that he knows that is a neighbor of his, a Black woman, and he was in a conversation with her, and Black Lives Matter came up, and she was very proud of the fact that she donated $500 to Black Lives Matter, and she had a Black Lives Matter sign on her front lawn, but that's it. Okay, so it's more like a I feel good social justice warrior kind of thing. But I just thought that was so interesting that Black Lives Matter, which continues to grow, by the way, but it is absolutely in the White House. Okay, they're back in the White House like they were in the Obama administration, but they're getting pushback from their own community.
Well, they are. And people like Michael Brown's father is demanding $20 million from Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter, who has been donated over $90 million, as you said, really hasn't given any of it to the communities that need it.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And, you know, when Black Lives Matter started, actually, it goes back to the Trayvon Martin shooting with George Zimmerman, which is chapter one of my book, right? And then grew, that's how it got founded by the three founding members, who are all Black females. And it's interesting to note that they are not involved, the founding members are not really involved in the day-to-day ground-pounding operations of the BLM. But then when Michael Brown situation came, they started getting funded by, you know, Jay-Z, by high-profile celebrities and George Soros and the Tides Foundation and Beyonce and, you know, Carter and, you know, people like that. But it really just exploded after George Floyd. You know, that's when the movement just blossomed and they started getting these huge donations. But anyway, I just thought that was kind of an interesting, you know, thing to mention, that with even the within the Black community, there is pushback and demands for more transparency and donations to actually help Black people rather than the cause.
The case really is that it's not just that they're not helping their communities. They actually, when they start trouble and they start riots and they, you know, come down the streets, people, they do things like loot, break windows, things like that. People get all wrapped up in these movements and they actually hurt those communities in many ways.
And, you know, and that's what Mr. Steele was talking about. And that's what the pastor was talking about. He goes, those businesses served Black people. So when Black Lives Matter came in and they looted and they burned these businesses, the people that owned the businesses serving the Black community, you know, a lot of people are like elderly people, right? And they need, you know, pharmaceuticals, you know, they need medical supplies, you know, prescriptions, they need food and stuff like that, and clothing. They can't do it because those people have pulled out. Why spend hundreds of thousands of dollars building my business up just for the next George Floyd incident to occur and have Black Lives Matter return to the community and destroy it? And I totally get that. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that the Hood organization does in Southside Chicago is it actually has to take elderly people and people with disabilities and transport them out of Southside Chicago so that they can get the supplies and the medicines, the food and clothing that they need. How ironic is that? Are you ready for your second cup of coffee?
I am.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
I really want to switch it up, Ron. In Texas, we have just had our, what we call in Texas, 13 days of glory. I want to talk about it because it's just so inspiring. And then in your mind, compare it to the things that are happening today. Okay. 185 years ago, on February 23rd, 1836, the Mexican dictator Generalissimo Santa Anna showed up in a small town called San Antonio de Bear and began the siege against a small outpost called the Alamo. There, inside that fortified Spanish mission, were less than 200 men who were determined to make a stand for what would soon be the Republic of Texas. And here we are. They were led by a young 26-year-old from South Carolina whose name was Lieutenant Colonel William Barrett Travis. And as I say these things, it almost brings me to tears because all of the names that you hear me say are counties in Texas. So we have Travis County, we have Bear County. So the small garrison included men whose names will forever be remembered, like Davy Crockett.
And we have a Crockett County.
And we have a Crockett County and Jim Bowie. The following day, on February 24th, Colonel Travis wrote what would become a rallying cry and a historic letter. He gave that letter to a young man for whom a Texas town is named. And you'll know this one, Juan Seguin.
Oh, yes.
So Seguin, Texas. The letter was for delivery to General Sam Houston. That letter was at the end of the letter, he wrote victory or death. And that has become a rallying cry through the ages of Texas. And it's still relevant to us in Texas today. It was Travis's line in the sand and a call to action for people in Texas. And I see it as something that is still true. They stood on those ramparts, just under 200 men against an army of 3,000 to 4,000 Mexican soldiers. They were committed to not surrendering and not retreating. They knew that their stand would enable something greater, a chance for liberty and freedom from a tyrant. On March 2nd was the 185th anniversary of the Texas Declaration of Independence. The men at the Alamo had no knowledge that they were fighting for a newly established Republic of Texas, but they displayed impeccable character, commitment, and courage, realizing that they were preserving the essence of individual sovereignty, something we enjoy today and that we have to fight to preserve. They stood there, men of honor, ready to take their place in the annals of glory when on March 6th at dawn, the final Mexican assault came. The Alamo fell on that day, but Texas rose. Today, Texas has to make decisions based on everything that's happening in the country. Are we going to continue to rise to live out our days of glory, or have those days ended? And when we see some of the bills in the legislatures, even in our own Texas legislature, then we need to remember those 13 days of glory and the men that stood for Texas. Last week, the Satanic Temple of Texas filed a suit against the state of Texas, stating that Texas laws infringe on their religious freedom. They filed a complaint against Texas laws that restrict the murder of preborn babies. Their billboards say abortion saves lives. We have to take stands on the evils that are coming our way, both in our federal government and our state government, and remember the heroic courage of those 200 men at the Alamo, Ron. And if people have not been to the Alamo, I mean, it's an experience no one should miss.
You know, you and I have been to the Alamo numerous times. And of course, everybody that comes to Texas and comes to visit us, that's the number one thing on their list. And so we're very patient and we take them to the Alamo, and every single person has just been amazed by it. And I go back to the first time that I ever went to the Alamo. And, you know, as you know, decades ago, before I even got into law enforcement, I was a United States history teacher. And I used to travel all around the United States during the summers to get information for my class each year. But I never got to go to the Alamo until we moved to Texas. And when I got to the Alamo and stood in front of the mission building and then went around it, and of course, that used to be, it used to be much bigger, if you remember, right? I mean, there's—
Well, I wasn't there, but yes. But,
I mean, remember your history and you see the maps and you—
Yeah, you can see the relief maps there.
Right, it was much, you know, where there are buildings now and everything, that was actually, you know, a giant area around the Alamo. But the building, the church building, the mission of the Alamo itself is extremely small. I was captivated after seeing movies, you know, especially the Disney movie, you know, with John Wayne and everybody like that. You see the Alamo and it looks so much bigger. And when you get there, the first thing that came to my mind was, oh my God, all these people knew they were going to die.
Yes.
There was no way that any common man with common sense could think that you are possibly going to live through that siege. And it underscores the bravery. Now, you talked about legislation and you talked about fighting. And here's what a lot of people may not know. There is a faction within the city of San Antonio, including a former mayor and a person that used to be in the Obama administration. They're two brothers, the Castro brothers.
Yes.
And one, I think, ran for president at one time. And they are of the faction that basically want to destroy the symbol of the Alamo. And, you know, there's a beautiful statue. I don't know when it was created, but there's a beautiful statue, a relief of all I think it's called the Centigraph or something, but it's all of the famous characters of the Alamo, the Crockett's, the Houston's, the, you know, the Jim Bowie's, the Travis's, and they're all these beautiful 20-foot reliefs on the Alamo grounds, and they wanted to remove that. And basically, we know what they're going to do with it. They're going to get rid of it. They want to basically keep the building, but tear down the symbolism of freedom of the Alamo. And that was in legislation that was fought, you know, tooth and nail in the city of San Antonio, in the county of Bexar, and through the state of Texas. And thank God they lost it and the Alamo remains.
Well, this is 185 years ago that the Republic of Texas was established as a sovereign republic. 9 years later, after that, the Republic of Texas became the 28th sovereign state in the United States of America. Now, Texas is facing a scourge of illegal immigration coming over the borders and a federal government that has abdicated its role in protecting our sovereign borders from illegal entry and invasion. And, you know, I mean, on the bad side for Texas, Texas is the number one state in America for human and sex trafficking. Well, part of that is because of the length of our border with Mexico, and that is where the trafficking comes up.
And our corridor that you mentioned before, yes. The Highway 35 corridor.
Yeah, Dallas and Houston being the top two cities of trafficking in the United States. There's no glory in exposing our citizens to drug traffickers, gangs, illegal immigrants, criminality, and a resurgence of COVID. So the Texas Revolution, on that day, Ron, gifted us with this incredible land. And Texas, for people who've never been to Texas, it is an incredible land. It just has so much beauty and so much space, just, you know, so much space. It always amazes me when we drive.
It'll take over a day just to get through the state of Texas.
Well, at least a day, yeah. So on October 2nd in 1835, in a little town called Gonzales, there were Texans that refused to be disarmed and would not surrender their cannon. And they spoke those words of glory, "Come and take it." which you hear now all the time. It's on lots of our flags. You know, on the other side of that, we have a Texas Democrat member of Congress, Sheila Jackson Lee, who is leading the charge to disarm our country. And I still say to Sheila Jackson Lee, come and take it, because Texans are not going to give up their guns. The new proposals, H.R. 127 and H.R. 130, would render us subjects, not citizens. We would just be subjects that are disarmed and enabling greater totalitarian rule. This is the time for America to stand up, just as those patriots at the Alamo did, Ron. We cannot sit blindly by while our country is taken from us any more than the people at the Alamo did. And they all died. Every one of them that fought died. Now, they didn't kill the women and children.
I think there were three total survivors, you know, speaking of women and children, you know, of the Alamo.
Wow. Okay?
Yeah, just three.
So in Texas, we remember the 13 days of glory, and it's part of our fabric in Texas. And I think that every American can learn something from those 13 days of glory and look at what has been being done to our country, honestly, since this administration came in and is rapidly dismantling our country as we know it. They're stomping on the states, stomping on the Constitution. They want to take your First Amendment rights and your Second Amendment rights. And unless we stand and say something and do something, they're just going to roll right over us.
Yeah, you know, and we're relatively new to Texas, okay? We've been here about, you know, 5 years now. And, you know, escapees from California, and I think a lot of our friends and listeners, you know the Dr. Ron and Linda story. But, you know, one of the things that I want to share is that this state, we feel a part. We're in California. We were citizens and we were business owners. I didn't really feel a resonance with the state. I felt a resonance with the environment. Of course, California's got a beautiful, diverse environment, and we lived at the beach and we lived in the mountains, and, you know, we had a ranch, and, you know, we lived in different parts, you and I, both together and apart, lived in different parts of the state, both Northern and Southern California. But we didn't feel a part of something. And in Texas, we truly feel a part of something great. And when you go to Texas, one of the things that you're going to see, that, and I've been all over the United States and so have you, but one of the things that you're going to see is that most people in Texas fly a Texas flag.
Yes.
And we have a variety of flags. Of course, we have our beautiful, you know, red, white, and blue with the star, you know, Texas flag, but we also have varieties of the history of Texas that we fly, you know, like just down the street, somebody's flying an older Texas flag, and our daughter and son-in-law, they fly the come and get it, come and take it, Texas cannon flag. And there is just so much resonance with the history of Texas. And so Texas people are very proud. They wear Texas hats, they have Texas shirts. You just don't see that in California. You don't see that in New York. You don't see that in a lot of states, but you see it in Texas, because Texas, you know, Texans and Tejanos are extremely proud people.
They exactly are. So it's not just in Texas, but we all in the country need to come together and not allow these horrible bills, the H.R. 1 that will change our voting, and we'll never have another free and fair election again. The Equity Act, that is no equity act at all. I'm in shock, as I think many Americans are, as to what's happening and how rapidly in our country. But unless we say something and do something, we are just going to be you know, smushed like a bug on your windshield.
Well, yeah, you know, I would have never thought that in our lifetime we might see the demise of the United States of America as we know it. We might see that demise. And we can't stress the dangers of H.R. 1, this Voting Equity Act, where basically they're throwing out all the rules. The federal government is trying to usurp the states and take over the way that the states run their voting laws. You know, Texas is a great example. We have voter ID. And we've talked about this before. Our voter ID here is very serious. You've got to show a driver's license. You have to show a photo ID documenting and proving that you are a resident of the state of Texas. They take a look at the signature on your driver's license. They compare it to the signature that's on file when you registered to vote. They may even ask you to re-sign to compare. It is so different than other states.
Well, and I think that would get a constitutional challenge because it goes against the 10th Amendment of the Constitution.
Meaning H.R. 1.
Yes. But, you know, I want to talk about America Out Loud for a second, because I think now more than ever, Ron, people need to have news sources that are telling them the truth, that are talking about what the issues are rather than hiding them and hip pocketing what the news really is, rather than being disingenuous about the news, rather than telling you pieces and parts only. America Out Loud is a great place to be. And that would be going to AmericaOutLoud.com. There are articles, there are podcasts, there you can listen live. You can listen live to Dr. Ron and Linda every weeknight, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can listen to Ladies of Liberty, which I also host on America Out Loud, which is a fun and wonderful show, which is on at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every weekday. So how do you listen? You can go on your favorite podcast link. You can go on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, also on TuneIn or Apple Podcasts. You can pick any of your favorite podcast places and America Out Loud will be there and you can take a listen. And if you happen to miss anybody's show on the network, you know, just pick it up on podcast.
Yeah, you know, for instance, like with Dr. Ron and Linda, you just go to America Out Loud. The menu's very, very easy. You look for talk show hosts or talkers, and then you just click down the menu. You find Dr. Ron and Linda, and you just click on that, and it'll take you right to the podcast. And the other thing it'll take you to is it'll take you to articles. Linda Martinelli writes columns for America Out Loud. And then also don't forget about the America Out Loud bookstore, where we have books written by many of our guests and talk show hosts. I've got three books on the platform, the New Wade Justice series and the Black Lives Matter book. So there's all sorts of news and information. And the cool thing about America Out Loud, we never tell you what to think. We are very transparent. We're very open. And we let you, common sense conservative Americans, make up your own mind. And that's America Out Loud.
And we'll see you on the radio.